Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already January 7th and 8th, depending on when you're listening to this. Big shout out to my running buddy, John Mortimer from Millennium Running. The Millennium Mile on New Year's Day was quite fun. It's a great one-mile run. It's the perfect grade downhill, so anybody that's never run a sub-7 minute has a great opportunity to do that, and that's, of course, part of the Millennium Running Series. Last weekend's show, we also had Gene Jaroskis from the Discovery Center, and again, reminder, the Discovery Center right across the street from Northeast Delta Dental, you can't miss the spaceship, is one of those New Hampshire jewels that we have, and sometimes people that live in New Hampshire for their whole life don't actually go to these jewels that we have. So I encourage you to go visit the Discovery Center. Just go on starhop.com to make sure you understand, you know, what the business hours are. Well, this week's guest is Craig Peterson, and Craig is a technology expert. You hear him a lot on TV and other radio stations. He's had expertise in this technology field really since the 1970s. Craig, thank you for joining me this week, and I know you're busy with all of your media appearances and all the research you do, so thank you for spending time on Northeast Delta Dental Radio.
Hey, you're welcome. Us young guys need to stick together.
Well, flattery will get you everywhere, Craig. So I hear you a lot, obviously, on different radio stations and as well as on TV, but take a step back. I always find the listening audience always likes to hear, you know, people's background. So you've really been in this field, technology, since the 70s, probably since the Adam Osborne computer or something like that.
Oh, before that, yeah.
Or the Wang word processor and stuff like that. But tell us how you got into it and your background and how you've gotten this. Really, you really do have the handle of a technology expert.
Yeah, a very long time. You're bringing back some memories. It's been kind of fun, way back machine type stuff. But I first started in computers by designing them. And when I was 10 years old, Tom, I designed a computer that played chess. I designed that from scratch.
Wow, did you beat Kasparov or whatever?
Not even close. It was a simplified game on a smaller board, but it was a whole lot of fun. And then I ended up lying about my age back in the day. And when I was 15, I got a job with the Royal Bank of Canada.
Right, because you're a Canadian, right? You grew up in Canada.
I grew up in Canada. I'm an American now.
Super.
But I started in Canada, and I was doing administration on IBM computers. I ended up being a maintainer for IBM OS 360 and OS 370, writing code. And back then, the communications was HASP and RJE and things. I can see a lot of the listeners saying,
I think
wow, that's kind of cool. I remember that.
I remember R Basic. Did you do R Basic code?
Sure,
and then when you were in school?
Yeah.
I remember I went to Harvard. I actually roomed next to Bill Gates. And so this was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And even in those days, to get onto the computer, it was all through timeshare, and he would get up like at midnight and was on timeshare and would crawl into bed like
The old HP 2000,
4 a.m. exactly.
Yes,
so you've seen it all. So you've designed hardware,
designed code. When I got out of high school when I was 15, I graduated, and I had already designed a hotel management system, an IBM assembler, and a Fortran interpreter I had written in BASIC. So way, way ahead of the curve. And then in the early 80s, I started doing internet work. And that's back when Network Research Corporation out in Oxnard, California, and designed and implemented code over the years. I was down in Cambridge at the Open Software Foundation.
Oh, wow.
And I wrote the code. I rewrote parts of the operating systems that are used today still by Cisco and by Microsoft and Apple and many others. So code I wrote is still running parts of the internet today.
So you worked for IBM.
I haven't had a job since I was 17. So since I was 17, and that was a lot of years ago, I've been doing just consulting. So I'd have a contract, a 6 month, 1 year, two wow. years. I designed a system for NCR that was fault tolerant, failover Unix. I did all of the kernel work, and they made the hardware. And so I did that to run Walmart stores worldwide. And all. So I did that in the 80s as well as some of the other networking stuff.
So I always wanted to ask this of an IBM executive. So when I started my business career in the late 70s after I graduated, everything was Big Blue. We used to have an expression.
They owned the business.
Right. They owned the business, and we had an expression, you know, you could never go wrong by going Big Blue. In other words, if it came down to making a decision of, a digital equipment corporation mini computer versus IBM to be safe so you wouldn't get fired if it didn't work. Everybody always went Big Blue.
Never got fired for buying IBM.
Correct. So we always, Big Blue was the way to go.
Right.
So, and they had incredible training. I remember going up to upstate New York and they would take 20 users and for a week you would get all this training and it was unbelievable. Do you think that what's your opinion? Did they get complacent? Did they just not see that everything was going to be decentralized?
That's the problem right there. See, IBM looked at it in a way that I used to look at it as well, which is you've got the big iron sitting there in your computer room. You've got computer professionals trained at Harvard or MIT or a local state college, but they're professionals. They understand what a double entry journal is. They understand how to write reports, make them all work. So this whole little phase of these personal portable and other types of computers is really a phase because you can't let it out of that glass room. If you have a marketing executive sitting down making a spreadsheet, it's going to be crap, right? Because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to validate their results. And in fact, that's true. Over 97% of spreadsheets today have major errors in them. So you can't trust them, right? But IBM was looking at it rather arrogantly saying, well, you're not going to have these lines of business doing their own computer stuff. And of course, what ended up happening is IBM came out with the IBM PC XT, and that helped to solidify, frankly, the place for computers in the corporate world. They used the cheapest components they could. They used Intel, which was not a processor manufacturer. They made memory. They made terrible CPU chips. And I would add that to this day, being, again, an internal guy, right, working in the operating system, working on the hardware, I absolutely despise Intel's architecture to this day. But they just went with cheap. Cheap, 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 cheap. It's not going to go out. We don't need to worry about it. The glass house, which is where the iron was, is going to continue to own that space. Now, today, we got a real problem, Tom. You know, you run a business, I run a business, and I do consulting with tons of different companies. A keynote speaker, multiple times just in the last quarter here last year to major organizations. And when I talk to them, the biggest problem they have right now is that the lines of business have taken over. And so now you've got everybody from marketing through the physical facilities guy who are not only just making spreadsheets today, but they're installing smart light bulbs. They're installing security cameras that are connected to the network. And all of these devices are being designed by guys that design light bulbs, they design security cameras, and they don't understand networks. They don't understand security. They don't even segment the networks, just like the Department of Health and Human Services breach we just had revealed here, New Hampshire Hospital. It took almost a year and a half to get the information out. It was 13 months before they even really discovered what had happened. They didn't even have a segmented network, Tom. Basic stuff. So we've gone from the days of true IT professionals, the glass house, all of these people knowing what they're doing, to today where everybody has a computer. Everybody's buying cloud services. I bet you if you did an audit on any random company you walk into, you're going to see people using cloud services that IT doesn't even know about. They're going to be using Salesforce.com. They're going to be using Dropbox or Box. They're going to be using dozens of these different cloud services that aren't being audited, that aren't being backed up, that don't have the HIPAA compliance, which by the way, this HIPAA isn't just medical. Nowadays, nowadays, every business has HIPAA compliance issues, whether you realize it or not, because you have employee records. You have health records right there in your business, right? So it goes on and on. We have completely flipped the table.
So to some extent, ironically, IBM was right that it needed to be central, but of course the cat's out of the bag now. So here we are, everything mm-hmm. is totally decentralized, and it's beyond what you're talking about. It's walking around in an airport with an iPhone that has all of your company's data on it.
Yeah, exactly. So, in the coffee shop with your laptop.
So here we are. So it's happened. Where everybody has, you know, an iPhone or a computer of some sort. And everything is out there, and yet we have these laws like HIPAA. We're obviously Northeast Delta Dental falls under HIPAA, so mm-hmm. we spend a ton of time at every board meeting, you know, on cybersecurity. So we obviously can't rein it back in. We're not going to go back to the black box, so to speak. So how do we? I mean, is there other than sort of being aware and doing your own self to make sure that your stuff is secure? What can we do about it?
Boy, that is the real tough question. Most people that are in IT nowadays who are doing information technology stuff are obviously aware of security. But security is now more than a full-time job. So, for instance, when we go into an organization and we want to help them with their security and clean it up, we have to bring in hundreds of people. So let's describe the right way to do security, okay? The right way is you have a NOC, a network operations center, and that NOC is examining all of the traffic going in through your firewall and going out from your firewall, right? It's segmenting your network so that your sales guys don't have access to the payroll information. They're doing all of this, and anytime a flag pops up because they've detected a problem, they then look at it. Antivirus software, it's only 70% effective according to Symantec, one of the biggest antivirus software providers out there. So the right way to do this is to quarantine things that are questionable at the network edge. And then you send it off to the NOC guys. And we have 200 people whose only job, Tom, is to look at new threats to figure out if they're legitimate or not. And then if they're illegitimate, go in and pull them out. These guys are full time. How can you at Northeast Delta Dental or you at the local dentist office, how can you do any of that? So I love
talking to you. I got to have you, but we'll go into commercial break. But after commercial break, I want to get into the recent breaches, such as the Department of Human Services, and et cetera.
Sure.
So we'll return after break with Craig Peterson, technology expert. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffia with Craig Peterson, who's a technology expert. Yeah, you can see Craig has a ton of passion and expertise in this area. So one of the things I was curious about, Craig, was we heard recently about the attack that Dyn had to deal with. So tell us about that, because I did get it in preparing for this segment. A lot of people said, you know, we'd be interested to hear, you know, sort of Craig's view on how did Dyn handle it and how did it happen in the first place?
Yeah, this ties in directly, Tom, with what we were just talking about. We have in our homes now smart devices. Have you seen these little Amazon Echoes and Alexas and Google Home?
The Alexa, yeah, that's hot, right?
Exactly. And they sit there and they listen 24/7. And they upload. Now, most of them now don't stream 24/7, but if you get their attention, they'll start sending it up to the cloud. And then Google says they'll just keep it forever. We already know that. Well, Google knows how to design something that's reasonably secure. Amazon, again, IT professionals, reasonably secure. But let's go back to that light bulb maker. I have a Fortune 100 client right here in New Hampshire, a manufacturer. And they decided that they could save money by replacing all of their lights. So they went to LED lights that automatically turn on and off based on whether people are there on the manufacturing floor. Makes a lot of sense. But what they did is they installed lights that are network connected so that they're smart. Those smart lights now are installed by a company that's what they do, right? They've always installed lights. But they had no idea what a network really was, Right. So they wanted to just plug in some switches that they bought down at the local Staples store, and then they'd plug all of their little hubs in, and then they'd just use their own Zigbee radio waves to communicate. I'm trying to make this nice and simple, right? And they did the same thing with the security cameras. They put in new security cameras that were connected to the network. Isn't that wonderful? Well, they also wanted remote access so that they could connect in. So they want a hole in the firewall coming back in. And this is the first time ever that they had to do it on a segmented network. They didn't even know what that term meant, a segmented network. So we did it all for them. We made sure it was segmented. We made sure those lights, those security cameras were separate from everything else. And then we did something that almost no one does. We made sure that those lights and those security cameras could not get out to the internet except to the place for them to download new software or to get their commands. What happened at Dyne in Manchester, New Hampshire, just a couple of months ago, is that there are bad guys out there that are constantly scanning networks. In fact, if you plug in a PC to the internet, directly to the internet, it will on average be infected within 5 minutes. And if you look at those network connections, in some cases, like at I have a data center in Manchester, hundreds of times a second were being probed. That's how bad it is out there. So they're scanning, they're probing, they're trying to find devices that they can get at that have vulnerabilities.
2016 version of 1984.
Yeah, exactly. So they find those vulnerabilities, Tom, and then they use those vulnerabilities to launch attacks against other things. And that's what happened here. Primarily security cameras that were at regular businesses, at regular homes, just plugged into the network, were vulnerable. They were reachable. They were taken control of. And although they were still functioning as security cameras, they were also functioning to have hundreds of thousands of them send requests to Dyne right here in Manchester. Now, if you type in a URL, if you type in craigpeterson.com, for instance, on your web browser, it's going to take you to my website. But there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And one of the very first things is that it has to find out what the address is for Craig Peterson, for Northeast Delta Dental, for any of these places, right? So it goes to a DNS provider, is what it's called. That's who Dyne is. So they use these security attacks to make it so Dyne could not tell the difference between a good request and a bad request. It got overloaded. It's called a denial of service attack. And that Dyne attack now ended up bringing down major websites just by attacking that one place in the mill buildings in Manchester, New Hampshire, who, by the way, has multiple DNS systems around the world. So that's all it took.
So all of these headlines, I was looking at Reuters headlines, as I mentioned, our board meeting, and I'm sure most corporate board meetings now begin with, you know, a half hour on cybersecurity. So one of the things we're doing is we're educating our board members on it. We're obviously, as we recruit new board members, we got to bring on the Craig Petersons of the world. But some of these headlines: Asia financial body says China cybersecurity law could make risk management harder. Raid on 20,000 Tesco bank accounts fuels cybercrime. After cyber attacks, Internet of Things wrestles with making smart devices safer. And, of course, locally, as you already referenced, we had the DHS thing and, of course, the current thing going on with Russia. So we see all these headlines. Is there a theme in all of this? I mean, there are plenty of bad guys out there, but then there's sometimes just mistakes. So how would you classify some of these headlines? Like, for example, Let's just take the personal information. The DHSS clients, was that just a mistake or what happened there?
Wow. Well, I think my headline would be, you ain't seen nothing yet.
There's a song on that too.
20, as it turns out, Bachman Turn Overdrive. Yeah, 2016, Tom, was nothing. We're going to see major, major increases in all of this because there's good money in it. Willie Sutton, right? Why did he rob banks?
Because the money's there.
That's where the money is, right? Well, there's a young lady by the name of Heidi who was prosecuted here recently. And you know what? She did something called doxing. Have you heard that term before, D-O-X-X?
I've heard that. I've heard phishing, but explain it for the listening audience.
All right. So what doxing is you go online and you find out about someone. So, for instance, I'd go to Northeast Delta Dental. I'd see, wow, who's the chairman? Who's the CEO? Who's the CFO? Oh, great. So now I go onto Facebook and I send you a note. Hey, Tom, I haven't seen you since Harvard days. Go ahead and friend me. So Tom's going to look at that and say, whoa, wait a minute. I don't remember. Yeah, what the heck? And accept the friend request. So now she goes in and she looks at your Facebook page and says, wow, Tom, you're heading off to Bermuda at Christmas time. Okay, so now let's find out about the CFO. Gets more information about the CFO. So now you're on your way. You're on your cruise ship heading to Bermuda. She knows you're on that cruise ship, by the way, because you said it on Facebook. You posted something on Twitter. You put something out there online that she could document, that she could find. So now she calls up tech support and says, hey, it wouldn't be her in this case because you're a guy, right? And says, hey, this is Tom. I lost my account information. Can I get my account reset? She's got enough information on you, where you were born, what school you went to, that she can probably answer the security questions and fool them. Then she can go now, get into your mail account, find out that you do your banking through Bank of America, and go ahead and also look at your emails to your CFO. And so those emails to your CFO are a certain format. I said, okay, great. So then what she did is she sent off an email to the CFO saying, we've got this new vendor. We've only had them a couple of months, but we haven't paid their bills. We're going to lose them. We got to keep them on board. I need you to wire. Guess how much money she got this one company to wire? $43 million got wired overseas by the CFO.
Wow, that's amazing.
Willie Sutton was a rank amateur.
So, and of course, there are a lot of smart, creative, bad people out there. So, I think...
And that's the training you were talking about in your board meeting. Yeah. You know, it's here's the vulnerabilities, here's where the problems are. Because there's certainly computer vulnerabilities, right? But she didn't have to use a single one. That was a social engineering attack backed up by what's called doxing.
Wow. Tell me about this other headline. Travel app Hopper is booking $1 million a day in
flights. Well, this is kind of cool. Okay.
And getting 90% of its revenue from push notifications. So what is that headline?
Well, this is different, okay? We're out of the security realm here now. Right. This is very cool. I got a notice from them this morning, in fact. An app called Hopper, it's actually been out there for a while. And I have teams working for me all across the country, in fact, all around the world. So I fly fairly frequently. If you fly frequently, check out Hopper. You're going to love this thing. But what it does now is you install it on your smartphone. You go there and you say, on this date through this date, I want to travel from here to there. And then Hopper will give you some recommendations. 95% of the time, the recommendations are accurate as to when the best price will be for that ticket. So it'll tell you, hey, wait a few days, it'll go down, or it's going to go up, you better buy it right away. In fact, I got my notice this morning, said, basically, I told you so, your price just went up $800 for that plane ticket, which I decided not to take in the first place. So it's kind of a cool way to use an app. You had asked about what these push notifications are. That's where when you install an app, that app has the ability to pop something up on your screen. So it comes up and it says, hey, just out of the blue, I found a better price for you, or this is the best price we're probably going to get. Now, that's an interesting way to do it. So, for instance, in your business, if Northeast Delta Dental, let's say a regular dentist, right, wants to remind people, you can send them a text, which a lot of places do. You could send them an email, which is great, too. But how about having an app? And the app lets them find when the best place is to go, have their teeth cleaned, do this, do that, have some procedure done, and pops up for them.
So that's the cool thing about technology. It's so awesome, yet it's created such greater
risk. It's scary on the other side,
exactly,
isn't it?
The yin and the yang. So could you spend 30 seconds on your view of the so-called Russian election interference, and then 30 seconds on us as an individual? What can you do as an individual to minimize breaches of
your stuff? Tough question. This Russian so-called breach, it definitely looks like it was not a breach. This week on Sean Hannity's show Tuesday night, followed up Wednesday night, he had Julian Assange on. What it really was not a hack.
From WikiLeaks, right?
From WikiLeaks, exactly. Was not a hack. At best, it was a breach. We had the head of Hillary Clinton's committee with a password of password, right? And he gave all that information up. They were able to use it to get all that information. So the Russians probably had little or nothing to do with it. And if you go to my podcasts, you'll find a lot of info on
Beautiful.
That.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm an individual citizen listening to this show, and I'm getting nervous. What can I do as an individual? Forgetting my role as an executive at a company, but
right.
just the average citizen in New Hampshire, what would you recommend?
Well, we'll stop picking on Tom. We'll use another example here.
Thank you.
So let's say Mary wants to try and keep her information safe. I can tell you what I do. I use a couple of different sites that create false identities. So it comes up with a name, an address, a birthplace, just all kinds of stuff, birth date, parents' names, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't use it fraudulently, right? I'm not trying to defraud anyone. But why does Facebook need my real information? Why does Spotify need it? Why does Pandora need it? Why does even Twitter need my actual real information, right? So I try and mix it up so that the big data mining that's going on and the doxing that's going on doesn't put two and two together. And I'm afraid that's kind of all you can do. And you have to trust your providers. Because if your providers don't have good security, it could all be gone right there.
Craig, thank you for all of the way you've educated us here in New Hampshire. I enjoy listening to you on other stations and your TV work. And I'm going to have you probably speak to our board of directors upcoming. So
yeah, sounds good.
Craig Peterson, thank you. Technology expert extraordinaire. Thank you for living in New Hampshire. Tom Raffio, return next week with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.